This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week. This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi, featuring body language and human behavior expert, Mark Bowden.
Let's talk about Alec Murdaugh a little bit. That's been a fascinating case. We've watched this and there's so many aspects and elements to it. You know, if we go back before the murders took place, we're talking about a lot of financial crimes and a lot of people he was able to lie to and continue living a somewhat normal life where people would look at him and they had either respect or they just, you know, they kind of saw he's kind of a shady character. All depended on the perception of who you were and I guess how he affected you. But yeah, let's dive into him a little bit. What were some of your observations from, you know, the time of being charged and he still continued to deny that he had anything to do with the murders?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you watch him in court, or certainly when I watch him in court, what I see is some classic elements of deception there. Now, we're always looking for clusters. We're not looking for one thing. We're not looking for, hey, you know, he scratched his nose at that point or any of that kind of internet nonsense that goes on. We're looking for, you know, enough evidence that says it is so much more likely that he's being deceptive in this particular situation. And there's high risk. To this, you know, he will, you know, there's the potential here if he doesn't lie well, that he will spend a lot of time, you know, in a prison somewhere. So, look, we see indecisive, indirect movement when he's giving testimony in court. Think about being direct when somebody has a very clear idea of what they're saying, what happened. They can see it in their mind. Why? Because they did it. It's exactly how it turned out. And their body knows that to be true. Everything is very, very clear and direct. When there's conflicting stories, there's what they have to say went on, but then there's what's really went on. And there's the risk of, hey, people might be able to uncover that difference. Everything becomes very less fluid. It's more staccato. It's more indirect. So you see him when he's telling stories. You'll see him kind of hunched over and making himself smaller. He's a big guy. He's a massive guy. Yeah, big guy. But he's used to being the big guy in the room within his group, within his society. But now he's hunched over. He's more protective. His gestures are more indirect. They're less fluid. They're more staccato. He's minimized. We get things like more vocal clicks, which are these moments where you get this sound in the mouth before he starts to say something. So we've got more stress happening there. Now you might go, well, I mean, there's a lot of stress in the court. Yes, of course. Of course there is. But it's where those extreme peaks of stress come, what questions are asked, what stories are being told, what narrative, what information is being given across when the stress comes. So look, there's a lot in there, you know, single shoulder shrugs we get a lot, which again is unconfident with the story that he's given. Look, if he lived it, if that's what happens, should be very, very direct, very, very fluid. Very, very confident, maybe double shoulder shrugs of like, look, that's kind of the way it happened. You can try and look for another story, but that's the way it happened. But not the single shoulder shrug of, well, that's the way it happened. That's indecisive. That's asymmetrical. Anyway, I hope that makes sense to you, Tony.
No, it does. One element of his case that has always fascinated me, and I think a lot of people wonder about, is, you know, not only did he kill his wife and son, the evidence certainly points that he was there without a doubt, but was there somebody else involved? I mean, that's kind of the weird crux of his whole case of, is he able, when he speaks, when he says, you know, I don't have an exact quote in front of me, but essentially when he says, you know, I didn't do this, this was not me. Does that read as a lie? Does it read as kind of a half-truth, like there's some knowledge that there was involvement there, that he knew what happened, even if it wasn't him, or does it read straight out as, yeah, you did this?
Well, I haven't looked at that exact moment, so I would have to look at that exact moment to go, okay, well, what's really happening there? But we've got to go, look, well, you know, what's he likely to say? Is he likely to go, you got me, I didn't. So that's unlikely. So he's going to have to answer. He's going to have to answer, no, wasn't me. If he's been given some kind of plea bargain and the stress is enough, is he going to drop an accomplice in it?
Yeah.
That's possible. So why doesn't he do that?
Yeah. Like, why? Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? And people could go, well, you know, there may be some coercion from elsewhere or there may be some moral compass around that. Well, hang on, though. It sounds like, you know, he's committed a number of crimes against, or certainly done things which his group, his society weren't good for them. Mm-hmm. Why suddenly is he now suddenly loyal to this one accomplice? So again, we've got to look at what's human behavior, and why would he suddenly break a pattern of being in it only for himself for this moment here?
Sure.
I mean, there seems to be a pattern of a human being who is very much in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. I understand he may well have feelings for, you know, I've shot my son, I'm now very sorry about that. I kind of went, but in the moment, it's all about him. Yeah. So why in that moment of somebody going, look, did anybody do this with you? Why at that moment does he suddenly get socially aware?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And go, oh no, hang on. There's a moral compass there. I mean, you don't drop your friends in it, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, so you do kill your family, but you don't drop your friends in it. So is it possible that there's an accomplice?
Yeah. That's
very possible.
Probable, though?
Is it probable? No, no, it's not probable at all. Yeah. Because that would be a complete break in his usual patterns. Mm-hmm. Now, is this the time when he does that break in his patterns? Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why this time? Why change what has clearly been going on for a long, long time? With him, has the ground really shifted underneath his feet enough that he'd go, yeah, now's the time that I break my pattern and I go, yeah, there's a whole criminal organization alongside me, which is probably one, you know, idea out there that he, you know, he's being coerced by a full criminal organization that, you know,
it's a thought. Is it possible? Probably. Probably not. We probably would have figured that out by now. Yeah.
Probably not. Probably most likely he got a gun and shot both of his.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.